Now, don't tell Mark this. My last Sunday here in, doing this will be June 11th, and I suspect, I think, maybe, I'll get just a little teary-eyed. But don't tell Mark, because then he'll worry that he's not the only one in the congregation who does that. So, mum's the word. All right. Sharon, thank you for your music, as always. And thank you, everybody, for being here. Also, those are here in spirit, which means you're listening remotely. Thank you for being here as well. I'm still learning to be able to do that every Sunday. And I think it was Amy who suggested it. And thank you so much, because we have a number of people who aren't here in person, but here spiritually and virtually. So thank you to you as well. So, about 4 years ago, and it was 2019, I wrote a passage on my Facebook page about being hired as a contract minister here in Meadville. Now, mind you, I had never been to Meadville except once when I met with the search committee here. Is that right, Deb?
Yeah.
Sometime? Yeah, okay. And I found that paragraph on Facebook. And it was dated in mid-July of 2019, and I'd been hired by that point. In fact, I know I'd been hired, and Deb, you're nodding, so that's good. Deb was the chair of the search committee, weren't you? Yep. Anyway, so that was mid-July, and I think it was just before I arrived here. But I had high hopes that this would be a successful partnership with this congregation, who has a long and illustrious history. But here's the amazing thing about that post. And I mentioned it at the first picnic that we had at Bicentennial Park in August of that year. And it was amazing. I had 85 comments in my message about Meadville and coming here. Many were congratulations. Nobody commiserated, by the way. But 27 people who were my friends on Facebook commented about, oh yes, I lived there as a child, or my family grew up there, or I attended Allegheny College, or I spoke at the church, or I was a minister here, Kate Walker and Carmen Emerson as two examples. It was amazing. I mean, 27 people from all over the United States saying, oh yeah, I've been there, I grew up there. It's pretty amazing for a small city in northwest Pennsylvania. I have never had an experience like that, even going to Seattle or Fort Worth or Clemson or wherever. This was a unique situation. And I couldn't quite figure out why, but when we had COVID and other stuff going on. And then a little while ago, about a year ago, an acquaintance of mine, John Beamer, who is, he and his wife go to a UU congregation outside Portland, Oregon. And he contacted me, you want to get together for lunch? And I hadn't seen John for years and years, and I said, sure. Well, it turns out his father lives here in Meadville. I mean, come on, what is it? Now, part of John's work in environmental restoration is a book he'd written, Our Environmental Handprints. And it's a way to recover the land, reverse global warming, and reclaim the future. And he's really dedicated to this work, and he's a professional. But anyway, he came here partly to have lunch with me, but partly to talk to people at Allegheny College. He was thrilled with the solar panels on the building, and his publishers asked him to put another book together, and I would be surprised if it does not mention Meadville and this church. But what the hell? There was another connection to Meadville. And I wondered, what is it about this place that so many people would say, yeah, I was there? Was it a mysterious multidimensional warp? Could it be something in the air? Or maybe the water? Well, probably not the water, but maybe the air. Or just was it coincidence that a bunch of people I know on Facebook, near and far, just all happened to come here, live here, born here? What about it? It didn't make any sense. It still doesn't, by the way. But there's something about this small city of about 10, 12,000 people, and of course the college and this congregation and other religious communities around you. Something about it brought people here. Now, a retired colleague suggested that I look at the local cemeteries because, he said, that's where all the action is, in the past anyway. So, okay, that makes sense to me because throughout the course of my life, I have been interested, not morosely or whatever, in cemeteries. The one that we had in Lisbon, Maine, where I grew up, went back to the late 1600s. And it was just fascinating to look at those old tombstones from those early days and imagine the stories of the people who had been buried there. And so cemeteries mostly are understood as places of sacred, holy grounds. Now here's an example. Have any of you ever driven up to Maine? You have, okay, good. Slow but sure, this is good. I don't know if you remember this, but going northbound on the main turnpike, which is I-95, near Kennebunk, there is a small cemetery on the right-hand side of the northbound highway. It's got maybe 10 tombstones in it. And it's a family cemetery for the Hatch Mitchell family, and there are about 10 gravestones there, and mostly worn away, with a couple of exceptions. One of them is for Mary Hatch, who died in 1858, aged 94 years, 2 months, and 18 days. She was tough. As far as I know, the family no longer exists. The last burial there was about 1888. But here's the incredible thing about cemeteries, at least most of them. The turnpike had to be widened to 3 lanes in each direction. The Turnpike Commission thought about removing the cemetery to another location, but decided not to do so when they got over 20,000 comments online and otherwise about, don't you dare move that cemetery. So they decided not to. So the engineers, bless their hearts, got to work, and the new highway is about this far from the cemetery itself, which is now fenced off and you cannot get into it. Originally, when I was there, you could step over the chain link fence, and go in, but now, no way. So they took particular care, and you know how engineers are, they focus on this stuff, to make sure they were not going to have to interfere with the silence and the rest of those families. Now, I should add here that cemeteries for Black Americans and American Indians didn't fare so well until recent years. But I took my colleague's advice, as I always do, and I explored the Greendale Cemetery up there, I think that direction, and I explored it several times. Once when Deborah was here doing a walk with students, and a couple of other times. And I read up on the history of Greendale, and I learned that the original city cemetery was located at the old Presbyterian Church by Randolph and Park Streets. And then I'm quoting from the Tribune on this one. On March 11th, 1852, this is before our time, the remains in the Randolph Street Cemetery were disinterred and moved to their present-day location. Although they were placed in one large grave, the individual grave markers were also moved, and they are in a central section of Greendale Cemetery. So what I did, and you may remember that originally I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be fun to do a Memorial Day service on epitaph statements that people made? But I abandoned that because only one person responded. I wandered around a cemetery and I read tombstones. Many of them were in good condition because of the type of stone, usually granite, and the age, relatively young. But many of the others were eroded away so that you can no longer read them at all. There was no way to remember the stories of those people. And oh, you could by going to the records and so on, but there was nothing left to read, to experience in so many of those. Now, yes, there were a lot of politicians. There were a few malcontents, including some of the politicians. And there were large families with elaborate statues. And you may be able to guess one of the largest mausoleums on that property. Guess who it belongs to? Ida Cooper's. Yes. Not a surprise, actually. But here's what I noticed also. How many small gravestones, about this big perhaps, for children and infants all over the cemetery. I couldn't count them all. Most of the stones had a name on top and no other information about their brief lives. Now, as we know, infant mortality was very high in those days. But there was one family that especially intrigued me. Their family name was Haverty, H-A-V-E-R-T-Y. Does anybody know of that family? Okay. Well, they had a considerable large plot near the Civil War graves down, down near the southern end of the cemetery. They seemed to have been people of importance and wealth. And I was first struck by the small gravestone you will see on the front of your order of service. I was going by, and I stopped and I read, "Gentle, sweet, little Bertie." Obviously, the family cared enough to have the ornate stones for Bertie as well as his mother. And his mother's name was Minnie. And another ornate stone for her read, "Weep not, she is at rest," and with a crown on it. And crowns were supposed to symbolize the ability to go to heaven. So I checked later, because I was curious, if I could find out any more information about Minnie and Bertie. Well, there was another large monument to that family, and on one side of it, it read, "Albert B., infant son of Minnie A. and Emery S. Wilder, died September 8, 1885, aged 7 months. The script below it read, "We miss the bright eyes of our darling child and the sweet, rosy lips that so often on us smiled." On another side of that same monument, there was an inscription for his mother, Minnie. It read, "Minnie A., daughter of P.F. and L.L. Striskin, and wife of Emery S. Wilder, died February 27th, 1885, aged 20 years and 6 months. Below that script were the words, "How desolate our home, bereft of her." Now, my guess is, because it was exactly 7 months, that she died in childbirth. I mean, that happened a lot in those days as well. Bertie's death obviously was powerfully emotional for that family, but he probably died of illness, which was very common. Now, just imagine the story of that family. And apparently, none of that family is around here anymore. I have discovered, looking around Pennsylvania, or actually in the United States, there are a lot of Haverty's as a family or an extended clan around the United States, but none here. I don't know that story either. There are many graves that hint of stories long gone from us in 2023. As I said, there are so many famous and not so famous, drawn to Meadville. Again, that cosmic thing that happens that draws people here. Because so many were attracted to this small city, and they're part of our larger ongoing story in the 21st century. And that especially includes many veterans. There were generals and sergeants and privates. There were those who received the Medal of Honor. And there are too many to recite here today, and actually I do not know and I could not find the number of veterans who are buried at Greendale. I'm sure the information is someplace, but I couldn't find it. But given what I saw, I'm sure it's probably in the hundreds. In a few minutes after the offering, I'm going to invite us to name the names of veterans in our lives who have served and who have died. They can be any era in your families and circles of friends. I'm going to start here naming several veterans at Greendale who lived here for years after their service ended. And they had enormous courage. And you'll see why in a moment. Were they famous? Maybe. Maybe not. But they should be. And they should have fame that outlasts them for hundreds of years because of who they were. There's a sign on a stone that says, "In honor of the United States Colored Troops of the Civil War, buried in Crawford County," and these names are located in the cemetery at Greendale. I'm going to end by reading those names before we go on to the offering. Their names are important because as long as we remember their names, they are not truly gone. Samuel L. Gardner, rank unknown. Private George Henderson. Sergeant William Green. Corporal Frank Henry. Private John Hamilton. So many people have been drawn to this small place in Northwest Pennsylvania and found their homes here. And these black men who fought in the Civil War on Union side brought their work and their valor with them. So let's have a short time of silence to remember their lives, their service, and the courage that they brought to us here in this community. They help you and generations in the future to be part of your collective story. Because as long as their names are remembered, their story hasn't ended. So let's take a little bit of quiet time.